Hallo und herzlich willkommen im Etablissement, dem kleinen Bühnenpodcast für die Dame, die Rita Moreno und Cheetah Rivera nicht verwechselt. Heute zu Gast Joaquin La Habana. Er wurde in Kuba geboren und wanderte Mitte der 60er Jahre in die USA aus, wo er in Gesang und Tanz ausgebildet wurde. Von New York aus kam er 1981 nach Berlin, um beim Cabaret Chez Nous aufzutreten, war aber unter anderem auch am Theater des Westens in La Cage aux Folles zu sehen und entwickelte schließlich eigene Performance-Arbeiten zwischen Travestie-Show, Performance-Art, in die aber auch seine eigene religiöse Praxis mit einfloss. Er ist ein Performer, der Genres, Stimmlagen und Geschlechterkategorien schon immer unterlief. Also viel Spaß beim Gespräch mit Joaquin La Habana. So my first question would be, how did you grow up? How did you come in contact with the arts?
Well, I come from a musical family. My aunt, my mother's older sister, is a very, very famous Cuban singer, Olga Rivero. This is the last name, the Nachname von meiner Mutter Seite, Riveros. And then since 1949, seit dieser Zeit, sie ist bekannt und sie hat viele Aufnahmen mit RCA Victor, kennst du dieser alte Phonograph?
With a dog?
With a dog, Hund, genau, yes. With a dog. RCA Victor in der Latinamerika Abteilung, this department was called Pan Art, Pan American Artist. Mm-hmm. And that she has several LPs. She was chanson and ballade singer. And she was one of the first black who had participated in a continually show every Thursday on TV. Mm-hmm. And she wore very elegant clothes like Balenciaga and this type of clothing. She was very slender, very dark skin.
Which city are we talking? Which
Havana.
Havana.
Yeah, and she was working for this main radio and television company, which is CMQ, Cuban Broadcasting Company. And now it's called Radio Rebelde, the revolutionary communist television. But my aunt, she was always in the radio programs, and she sang with a small orchestras, always a pianist.
Yeah.
That was the period of the lounge hotels, which means in the beginning, in the front part of the hotel was always a piano and a singer. And she was that kind of a singer. Mm? But worked for major orchestras.
Okay, interesting.
But she was an open lesbian, and that became a big problem. Because all the singers in the big bands always were the wife of one of the instrumentalists or the big band leader.
Okay.
A wife. Yeah. And she not.
Okay.
So they created slowly arrangements problems because all these guys were after her. She was elegant and feminine.
And so, it would help if you would be interested in men.
In men.
Probably.
And, yeah. And at least cover it up. My aunt did not cover it up. Her backstage helper or dresser was her lover. Her lover was obviously more lesbian for the eye from the outside because she wore more masculine clothing. My aunt wore dresses. She was the feminine lesbian.
Yeah.
And the other one was more the butch type.
Yeah.
So that created then a problem because It was obvious they were like hiring. And all the, her best friends were all very gay and very, very affected. So in being that she right away had hits and she was in the creme de la creme, they had to support her and she had to go alone, and she felt she could just flaunt her homosexuality as a lesbian woman.
Okay. Did you grow up with her? Did you live in the same
house? No. She was the oldest of 11 children that my grandmother had, and my mother was the last child, number 11. And she was excellently, with also had a voice in singing, and my aunt was very fascinated in the idea that her sister had a talent. All the other people were conservative, normal, black people who were lost. Lots of them were musicians, but they were percussionists. My aunt and my mother were the only ones who were singers.
Yeah.
My father, he fell in love with my mother, forbid my mother to sing. I will not marry you if you become a singer. Women should stay at home and women should not be around those kind of men or those kind of people because obviously my aunt was what she was and the people around her were the people of the other milieu, which my father, who came from the countryside, the east of Cuba, Manzanillo, was he was a very handsome man, a mixture of Spanish, Arab, and in indigenous people.
Yeah.
So he had the straight hair, very elegant looking, very Hollywood-like, but
very strict.
Very strict and also simple background. He was very poor. He could not read and write. He was an analphabet, but my mother could. So he could not deal with the fact of being in this, loving around black people who were in music, but he didn't could not fit himself into having a wife who was an artist.
Yeah.
He felt like the man was is a provider and whatever. My mother would work with him, and my father was a carpenter. So it was very simple people. So, and my father was came from he learned carpentry, but he came from the countryside. So this kind of social behavior he could not understand in Havana.
So you had like both sides,
both sides.
The workers and the entertainment,
the entertainment
side in you, but you loved the entertainment, obviously.
Obviously, and my cousin, my mother's cousin, was a very important percussionist, which is his name was Patato Valdez, and he was working for the Riverside Orchestra, who always went in trouble to USA. My aunt was not only important in Cuba, she went to Buenos Aires, a city also of Mexico, Guadalajara, Acapulco, and then she was in Spain, in Madrid, in Barcelona.
And how did you find your way to the stage?
Well, my aunt took me everywhere she performed, because I was, by the time I was 5 or 6, she could take me around to her performance, and that's how I was fascinated with this television studio with the big 3 cameras when the cuts were made and that, and I would just look, and then she saw that I was not only fascinated, I was very refined, and that was very good for her. So then she took me everywhere. She was, being that she was gay, she had no children, so yeah. I was her favorite nephew, just like the musical Mame, Tante Mame. So she took me everywhere, walking here, walking here, and then there, and she would play the music, and she would see how I would move, and say, oh, the talent has been inherited, I'm so glad.
So she saw you dancing?
Yeah, see me dance when she would sing or react to the orchestrations, because in between the orchestra the moments from Julio Gutierrez Orchestra, which he worked for, and from Bobby Collazo's orchestra, who composes for her, I would move. And she would say, the talent goes up. Never heard me really singing, she saw me moving.
I see.
So then, fine. But eventually, I developed into singing, but I was more in classical voice, and her was in between. Chansons, boleros, acaros, and but I went into the other direction, which is not a problem. It's just like unexpected in the family to have somebody who will be more oriented to classical.
Okay.
Or born with a classical sounding voice. Totally opera. Totally another thing. But I was a soprano. I was a boy soprano.
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
That made my father really, 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 really mad. Because I would just...
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, looking, no, I can. I don't understand, but it makes sense.
And he was just saying, lower your voice, and I'm going... In a chassis there, and my father would slap me in the
Shut
face.
Up.
And I had 5 octaves to my voice, so I could go from very much to that. Do all those crazy things.
I see. But did you decide to get a classical education?
Yes.
Also in dance,
course.
No?
In
you did
dance.
Both.
Yes. But the problem is, like, by the time I was in Cuba, I could not get any singing lessons from that. I was 13 and a half when I left my country. And I was right in the breaking voice. And then I finally never lost that range. Became deeper,
good
but didn't the range. Good for me.
You kept the heights.
I kept the height. Because I had a very large range, which I found out later. So when I came to Boston, Massachusetts, when I went to the junior high school, I went from Cuba in 1966. I was 13 and a half, not quite 14. And then I had to wait for...
You moved to Boston.
My father had to leave Cuba in 1961 because he was part of the political movement. He was against the communist government, even though he was for Castro, but not for communism. So then he left 1961, like many refugees, and 5 years later, he was able to claim me as a family reunion.
You followed your father.
And then he claimed me. I didn't follow him exactly because my father was a homophobic. He was against my aunt because she was lesbian. He was against anybody who was in the theater who was actually queer people.
I see. Because I wanted to ask you if he was so strict. You lived with him then in Boston?
The first few years. And 2 years later, I just ran away from home. So then, since I'm 15 years old, totally away from my father. And I was able to get a scholarship in Boston Conservatory of Music. And then I also had a scholarship at the Boston Ballet, which through a television auditioning show for young talents, I got that. But I was already living no longer with my father, but in halfway home, what they call a home for Kinder ohne Eltern. Because my father used to just beat me up whenever found out that I was late in school, but I was not only late in school, staying extra hours for improving my English, but doing theater arts programs.
Oh, he didn't like that.
And he didn't like that. And he found that out when I was, by the time I was 15 and a half, because my photo came out in the newspaper, or the local paper of Boston, Massachusetts. And then the neighbors were, look, Leonardo, Señor Reyes, look, your son, talent, look, he won a trophy. And my father was so tired, and he waited for me, coming late. School usually is over by 3 o'clock, and I always came in by 6, because I was in the drama department, the school drama. He had a talk with me, beat me up, and then did it so often, then eventually one of the days, I just went out the street and stayed in a park. That was 1968. And then December 22nd. Never will forget that date. It's often in my life, this date has come up. And then the neighbor saw me in the park freezing and carrying on. And then the police went by and they said, what are you doing here? Don't you have a home? Said, no. And a lady who saw me, no, yeah, he lives over there. Then the police took me home to my father and knocked the door and come this totally Besoffen, a drunken man, and they said, do you know him? Yeah, he's my son, blah, blah, blah. He was so rude and whatever, and the police say, I see. And they say, are you responsible for these bruises that he has on his face? Yeah, this boy, blah, 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 blah. He said, okay, thank you. They closed the door and they took me. And since then, I belong to a situation of taking care of.
I see.
And I was separated from my father.
I see.
So then I signed a paper that my father was not the type that could bring any children of his. We had other brothers and sisters in Cuba from other wives. Not allowed through him because he was a violent man.
And this was the moment also you decided then to study dance and singing when you separated from your father?
Yeah, because my father then decided to take it seriously because I was already in the school, in the summer projects. I was involved in these theater programs with the calls in Somerville High School, summer projects. And I was involved in several musicals, Phineas Rainbow and one of the boys in the Sound of Music, many other West Side Story. I'd finished high school, and because I was so excellent with the vocal thing, I won many competitions and part of the chorus of the high school choir. My first voice teacher who auditioned, so I said, ah, but you have, wow, incredible range, and started training me. And then that's how then I got into the singing thing professionally. And I was by then about 16 years old. And 2 years later, I had to have my mandals taken out. And that changed my whole range. I lost one octave. I had no longer 5. And then
you lost the high?
The highest.
Oh, you could even higher. I could even higher.
Which is, when you are a male soprano, that 5th octave, way up there, is what makes it like, wow.
That's where the money is.
That's where the money is. You know, the rest is, everybody can do that kind of thing. And my voice teacher was against that I would be trained as a soprano. Said, no, you're for the tenor, or you actually, you have this range, you're a good high baritone, dramatic baritone. You have that range, you can use it. But she used me to make the exercises for the girls, to get that free, the head. I haven't warmed up today, whatever. But she would never gave me private lessons of that. I will always be next to the girls, do parallels, but always that. So I had to almost retrain myself and use the exercises to keep that head voice. And I did.
But your dance background, your dance education is super classical.
Classical and modern. Ballet and modern. You had to have both. Because of my singing possibilities, I had to decide. I had a dancer's body, but I had a voice.
I see.
So then the musical. I went to the Avanelli School where I had all the other training, for modern and for jazz, which is very important. Jeffrey Holder was a dancer, and he was beginning to choreograph a lot of things on Broadway. So these are the kind of black dancers fascinated me, who had a classical training, but moved with the flair of black people. And Horton is the only white who created a technique using the possibility of the black body.
So you decided to move to New York?
Yeah, from Boston to New York. And I was then...
And Elvin, I'm not such a...
Yeah, the Avanelli is in New York.
Is in New York.
But Jeffrey Holder and Tali Beattie, who were dancers for the Avanelli, they were all dancers before with Catherine Dunham, which is the people from the 40s and 50s. They were giving classes in all the poor neighborhoods of Boston, which is Roxbury. And there was a school called the Alma Lewis Afro-American Dance. And all the poor kids who could not afford ballet, who could not afford to be in the conservatory or music or whatever because their parents could not afford it, could go there.
When did you go to New York?
In 1969, wow. For the first time, exactly when the Girl from Stonewall things happened.
When what happened?
The Stonewall.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were on time.
I was on time. And then I was a couple of times in jail, I bombarded out of the bars. I didn't have the age. In America, in gay bars or alcohol, it was 21. Then they changed it to 17 and 18. And I was just barely made it to be 18. So then I was there, sneaked in, and they would do the raid all the bars, and then I signed the ID and the bingo and all that stuff.
Yeah. What can you tell me about this New York time? Well, I mean, 5 hours long. No, what do you think is interesting there work-wise for you?
Well, what was fascinating for me was this mixture. I saw many, many of my teachers in the bars, and I saw some of my other people in the arts, and I realized this ambiguity of going with each other, and the talent was a lot of gay people, bisexual people who would hate it. Like one of my teachers, vocal teachers in the school, was actually bisexual, was married, had kids, but then he would sometimes sneak to a gay bars. And when I was old enough to go, when you run into somebody like, oh, so-and-so, and it would just be like white, blue, all the colors. But one of the pianists I liked, and then, you know, we were even in bed once after I was out of school. But, you know, things like that. And he said, yo, we're always so talented, voice, this and this and that. And so I was fascinated with not only with Catherine Dunham as a black movement, but I was fascinated with this movement, which is Laura Duncan as a white dancer, which going away, using classical music, being halfway naked, which in the 60s was so important, 60s and 70s, with the open theater, the whole idea of people dancing naked. Then I was very too revolutionary for the classical, and then too way out for the black conservatives, who only they could get hired. And I was breaking both rules. So that's why I said I had to leave Boston and go to New York.
Yeah. Did you create your own performances then in New York?
Yes. Then I was introduced to the off Broadway. Yeah. Then I went to La Mama Experimental Theater. Then I met people like Lamar Alfred, who did the musical gospel, and all these alternative people. Then I met Harvey Fierstein.
Yes.
Yes. And he was performing there. And then I got to see the underground, and I was fascinated with that. But it created a problem, because then in the Alvin Alley and the other schools, you had to, you know, do black, but be conservative. And I would start letting my hair grow, not just an afro. I would just let my nails grow a little longer. I shave my eyebrows. And you have to be black, yes, but conservative.
Short hair.
Short hair. And it was not the first time I was confronted with this problem. I was confronted with this problem in many musicals.
I can see that.
Yeah. So then, you know, they want black people, but they didn't want the wild ones from the ghettos.
I see.
Remember the musical Fame?
Of course.
The movie, you know, because he came from the ghetto. Yeah. He couldn't read and write. He had to slowly, whatever. But then the ghettos made fun of me when I was going to school.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, so I understand the whole things of that.
But is this coming to New York also a little bit like finding yourself? That
yes.
If you said like longer hair?
Yeah, not only like finding myself, letting myself
like
go, be myself. I was already away from my father for several years, and I went to New York because I had room to be.
And did you try Broadway or something? Did you audition for stuff?
Yes, I finally made it to some things on Broadway. I was in there was a musical with Irene Cara was involved in, mm-hmm. and she was sort of like a Cinderella version of in a disco time. And I was part of that, but I was becoming no slender, too small. The dance size changed in commercial dancing. So I looked too delicate. So almost the same problem that in the musical Chorus Line.
Mm-hmm.
I looked too feminine, and my body was too thin, but muscular compared to the kind of men they needed, because the girls were getting taller and stronger. So that means
on Broadway?
On Broadway and all the shows.
Like this model size, like
yes.
You need to be
look at all that. And the black men had to, the men could not look like in classical music so delicate. The whole change. Nureyev helped that in ballet, the men would look a bit more masculine, even though they could be gay. But because the role of the male in ballet became stronger and on Broadway as well. So then, and if you were a singing dancer, then you must look a little, and I always look like a young boy, even though I had a baritone voice or a high baritone voice.
Yeah.
So then it was frustrating because then I had to always play an old man, you know, because the baritones are always the old or the bad guy. And I had a body like him when I did some of the productions of Poggy and Bess. I had the look like Sporting Life, but my voice was no longer so high as I wanted it to be. It was a bit darker. So I had a better voice for being the husband of Serena, who is the one who sings the song Summertime. Summertime. You and her husband. Her. Yeah, it could be her, right? And then her husband, who says, there, you don't need to be afraid, mama. And the part, I look like a child. I always look 15 years younger than my age. And on top of with a ballet type of body, forget it. Yeah. So this contradiction helped me to eventually develop my own concept, my own shows and characters. So then I started doing shows where I say, put a wig, take off a wig, put on a hat, and change ranges. And that's what brought me to Europe.
Okay, interesting.
Because in America, there wasn't room for me. I was too classical sounding because as a black man, I should sound like a husky, you know, more like funk music. And my voice was not like that. So even in the when I did hair in the chorus, I could not get any solos because I didn't sound black enough.
You did it in New York.
In New York and in the tour.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you say that's the reason you came to Europe, because the cliche would be, I would think, like that New York in those times were like, do whatever you want.
But to be in a new show, off Broadway, you could do anything you want. But Broadway, that was the question. You still have to, you know, fit. Even La Musique La Cage aux Folles, how many blacks are in there?
None.
And I was too dark to be Latino. That's another part. I have too many Afro features to be a Latino. And too light to Afro-American. Okay. So all those contradictions eventually said, I had enough of this shit. New plays, new musicals, rhythm. Well, but Broadway still had a format and it's but a typecasting situation.
So you came to Europe because you still had this like musical, like Broadway dream?
Dream. But also then I realized, forget the musicals. There is review houses here where you can be male, female, travesty, blah. Then I said, my manager, who was German, Kuno Spunholz, was a Berliner. I was brought here through work for Cabaret Chenu, who needed live performers. There was not. Cabaret Chenu was one of those who was, everything had to be live. You were a singer or you were a dancer, you were a whatever. It was your body. Because I could sing. And I had this active thing. Then I made an act.
For Chenu. This is how you started
That's
in
how,
Berlin?
That's how I got to Berlin. Cabaret Chenu. And then once I was here, then I was able to audition for these other normal theaters.
Can you tell me a little bit about your Chenu times?
The Chenu
times? How long was that?
Three years. I did two seasons in Berlin and two tour seasons.
How did your act look like in Chenu? What did you do there?
Very tropical. Thomas Schmieder.
Yeah.
He wanted me, because I was Cuban, to only concentrate on materials that had to do with the Caribbean or Brazil. I wear the name Joaquin La Habana Reyes, and in the stage only Joaquin La Habana, to represent the classical part of Cuba, because everybody thinks of Cuba only rumba and salsa, whatever. Cuba had other things too. And also a core classical repertoire for black singers. And that I was not allowed to do for Chenu.
But did you try to sneak in other stuff as well?
Well, I brought things from The Wiz of Oz, the movie, and If You Can Change, Home, all those songs, which, you know, I would have known enough. And then from my changing clothing from male to female, I use all I got to do is to hear the music and dance, you know, from chorus line.
Mm-hmm.
All I ever needed was the music and the mirror. To dance. Da, 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 da. And then the female will change to a man. I say, but then look, I like to do something like mix. I sing soprano and then I'll sign it up. But what about I do half male, half female? Ah, that's been done by Europeans. You don't need to duplicate that. Do what you do yourself. Oh. Then my hair also was too long. So I wore my hair all tucked up because he wanted the idea of herring as diamond. So you have to look like a boy who can be a gorgeous, fantastic, glamorous woman. And at the end, some kind of a, you know, boy who, like, you know, put your dress back on.
Yeah.
And I hated that, which is the typical Marion Gordy. You know, you always said, they took off the makeup. My, you know, this is my life, all that shit. And people did. Or the other song, or like, you know,
My Way,
down thousands of times, and said, no, I sang The Impossible Dream from the musical
Men from La Mancha.
That's when I did my changes. I would not do what they expected. But they're so used to the formulas that already worked. You had to fit in. I need a Latino. I had a Brazilian. Now you're Cuban. Great. New thing. Cha-cha-cha. Mambo. I started with that. Incredible music. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Mambo. But then changed to slowly. Then stroboscope. And I would change to female to male. And all of a sudden when the light went on, I had no breast. And then do the dramatic musical theater ending.
Yeah.
And it was successful. But he wanted me to always say, but I want to say, I tried that. But I don't want every season to do this and just change the songs, but the same nonsense. So the half and half, he never let me do. Yeah. So when I came back to Berlin in 2 hours, I saw Love Young Rose, which was a review theater and the style of the Crazy Horse and Carousel of Paris. Bingo. I've been to Paris and seen that and met Cosinelle, and Cosinelle was working for Chenu, and she told me, go to the Vian Rose, going to have auditions. I went there, and then I tried this thing about half man, half woman with a voice.
Where was that?
La Vian Rose originally was in Adenauer Place, and they changed to Europa Center in the basement.
Ah, yeah.
And no longer there. It disappeared.
There were a lot of varieté
theaters all over the place.
They don't exist anymore.
They don't exist anymore. I was in Chenu and also them in La Vie en Rose. Then I met Christopher Braunheim again, which I had seen him in New York. And then he put me in a movie of his together with other Americans, artists, friend of mine who were travesty, or some of them were already sex changers, like Angie Stardust. Tara O'Hara was a striptease artist. And we were together in a movie called City of La Soul, The Start the Florin is Sailing, where then in 1983, I was featured as small role, but I composed a couple of songs and I was in it. And again, I didn't get to sing in the other voice.
Yeah.
But he gave me the contact for Theater am Turm in Frankfurt. They needed gay artists or queer artists would work on this theme of changing the roles of male playing females and all that. And in that festival, I was invited. And then I started doing my own shows. And I did not sign my contract with Chenu again, which he hated.
Okay.
And Rosa is the one who gave me the extension on my visa, Rosa von Braunheim, and not Chenu.
Theater am Turm is like really, yeah. You could say it's like serious,
yes,
experimental art.
But you had to have all the training and the real, and then experiment and go over whatever you wanted, homosexuality, whatever you wanted. But you had to really have the training and the meat, you know.
How did you work then? What stuff did you combine in those
I was very good at creating my own librettos or storyline, and I used myself, like, you know, I was this kind of a boy. Theater am Turm loved this self-projection of tell your story. Don't copy anyone. Don't be a star parody or like at that time, 70s and 80s, was very popular to be a female impersonator, but you need a star. You need Liza Minnelli or you need Judy Garland or blah, blah, blah. And I had nothing to do with that ever. And I picked up female characters from opera or musicals. So I picked my Fair Lady to do the half male, half female.
At Theater am Turm?
So I did.
They probably didn't hear a lot of My Fair Lady and musicals back then on this stage.
No, but yeah, but I did we call the Faces was the name of the show, my own writing with a couple of friends. And a friend of mine who was German found for me an old opera done by Hasse, composer, classical Baroque time, where Castaldi's sang it. Then I did the whole thing from the. Yeah, it's like a panoramic thing about what happened to men and how they were replaced by women. And now we're doing back. And that was the Rotafaden and the ganze Stück. And then I was fascinated as a child in the carnival. So all that I incorporated in my storyline. And that's why I was able to get a whole evening and then a tour with the people, the backup from Theater am Turm through Köln and other places that I was traveling in with my own shows, two dancers, half playback, original music, and two or three musicians.
Yeah. Amazing. Did you do a lot of projects after that? Like in the vein of this show?
Kind of, yeah. But it became a problem to continue because after you've done all the theaters, you have to create a new program. And I didn't have enough money to reproduce.
But what would you say was your next step in your creative life?
What happened is then another management said, okay, solo in varieté shows. Then I got a Stuttgart varieté. Then I got many others where I go and do 20 minutes or 15 minutes of changing characters. Like I said, I will open with Masquerade, Baroque costume.
Masquerade, Phantom of the Opera? No.
Yeah. That's the orchestra. Then I will do the text from Pipping, which is you have magic to do just for you. And then all of a sudden, boom, boom, bang, with a mirror. And then change to the character of Don Quixote. But then the front part would be a paper mache corset with a halfway mask. And would be like Don Quixote with a long nose. And I would sing, hear me not, unbearable creature of the world, a face and device I can be. And then later on, turn around, boom, boom, and put in the wig. I am not a sinner. And then become that. And then from there, change to Spanish. Music will be all was arranged and pray for me. then I'll become Carmen.
You loved mixing the genres?
Yes, but I had the combination, so I had to find a way to do it. And I found a perfect way, going from classical musicals to the opera.
Yeah.
And then which character will go with my temperament in the story?
Yeah, but that's a radical way of working, you know, in a country where, like, the genres are
Yes. Being that I was given this slap, so I said, okay, you don't want me, but I will do it. You don't have a place for me, I have to create one for myself.
Yeah.
Now, I was good with choreography. I was good in writing. So then people asked me to choreograph for their shows, the concept and stuff. And the gala business, because I was already coming with credits and very good things in the newspaper, always.
You did a lot of galas.
Galas.
That's a genre in itself.
No? Which now hardly exists.
No. I think that's a thing that a lot of people earn their life and their living with, no? Is it like for companies? Or
yeah,
how
exactly.
How does
and
work?
At that time was a lot of industry shows. It means IBM or BMW, any of those Mercedes would do shows in America. I was working for Le Clique, and we did all the industry shows for the recording companies, especially for the disco scene. The Le Clique Fantasy Players, we did Studio 54 for the promotion things of records.
Okay.
So we did opening acts for Grace Jones, Gloria Gaynor, Adana Sam, all those people, dancers, acrobats, singers, in groups, and we'll come from the ceiling. It was called a disco circus.
I see.
So they incorporated all those people.
Yeah. So you had experience in doing gala.
Yes.
Gala
and preparing. And then, so then when New York was for me the perfect place to train myself, and where I was, a door closed here, another one opened over there.
But for example, when you say like in your own performance work, you did like, you mix like opera and musicals, but this is something usually in Germany is very...
Exactly. Made it for the...
But why is that? Do you have any theory about why the Germans are so like...
Oh, they feel like,
they
you know...
They like to separate
everything? Music and music. Yeah, yeah. They went to all the nonsense. They feel like, you know, the highest is classical music and the rest is just tingle tangle, blah, blah, blah. Because there was actually not enough people who could do both. And when they did the both, you have to always make a choice. You became more respected if you did only classical. The other considered the cabaret. Remember, after World War II, the cabaret became only political with a K. And cabaret with a C became all these places where all the sexual stuff went on.
Yeah.
Chenu was not, they had a separate for drinking, but no sex in there. But Pupafas in Hamburg and all the other places was always mixed a little bit.
There were
bit
a lot of sex work involved.
Yes, involved.
Yeah.
I was not involved with that. So that's why then they decided that if you were too known by being in the Pupafast, which is in Hamburg, or in Chenu, or in worse, if you were involved with the people of Romy Hag, who was another rock cabaret.
Did you work there?
A couple of times, a solo in the strip, but I was not a permanent member. Romy felt like you are talented, but you know you are one of our sisters. I said, no, I'm a boy. And she always hated the fact, you know, yeah, we can call each other sisters, but, you know, I am a transformist. I am into changing. I don't want to have my own breast. I don't want to look in the mirror and see only the female. I am an androgynous person. I am bisexual. I said, I had nothing to do with it. But no, but the question is, once you start taking the pills or taking other things, I'm happy with what I look. I have a lot of hassles. I don't get jobs because I look too androgynous or I decide to mix the two. I am a cross-dresser and I'm happy with that.
Okay.
But, yeah. And that's, they had to deal with it. So they respected me, but they felt like you've been a fool.
They thought you were a fool.
Yeah. Somebody who looks so good as a woman, I'm a child, forget the boy. Because you eventually will get old. But I don't want to become an old travesty stars, like somebody looks like the Friedhof or the Elefanten.
Elefantenfriedhof, yes.
Elefantenfriedhof, yeah, with the English away.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to become that. And they got very offended. And not because I'm against age or aging. I think one can age glamorously. But the question is like, nobody else wants you, then only an old travesty because you were somebody someday. And you don't fit in your dresses anymore. So they have to get your dresses get bigger and bigger and bigger. You don't look like a dress. You look like you're in a tent.
Yeah.
Because you have to hide, you know, the figure you don't have anymore. And said,
what I found interesting is what you said that maybe in Germany, maybe I didn't understand you right, but I just repeated as I understood. Mm-hmm. It's like it's so separated because people can't do both.
Yes, but the
people are not able to do both.
Both.
That's right. I never thought about this.
Yeah.
It's like you're basically an opera singer, but then you don't sing musicals.
Yeah.
The musical, or you are a pop star, but then you don't sing opera, or you don't touch opera.
No, because the classical music is established and is the overseer. Then if you do operetta, that's already second class. But at least it's closer. Because the operettas were the musical of their time.
Yeah.
They were the avant-garde, twisting things and whatever. The musicals came in.
And they people, maybe operetta in their time, were also a little bit like looked down upon. Like,
yes, at that time.
Yeah.
But eventually, they got together. Now it's okay. But musicals were not considered as serious until the composers changed, who wrote much more complicated. And then it ain't necessarily so. You play with the voice, it made it funny, but you still, when the time came to the high note, you had to hit it.
Were you in Porgy and Bess when it was at Theater des
Westens? Yeah, a couple of times, but then I got a better contract, and it always conflicted with my own shows, so I'd rather do that.
Okay.
Because I will have to be in the ensemble of the dancers. I would never get no sport in life, no, because the other guys, I didn't have the body for it. Like I told you, I mean, I look like a child, and I sound like a, but I love singing the Serena's Husband. The body didn't go with it.
I see. Yeah, I mean, you had main character energy.
Energy.
You wanted your solo, you wanted your show.
Yeah.
Can I ask you something else? I feel like we're sitting in some kind of,
yeah, you're in the temple. Yeah, yeah.
How does religion like play into your work?
My family, I said before, they were not only musicians, they were also very important high priests. And my great grandmother, coming from Nigeria, she was a domestic slave brought in the late 19th century to Cuba in a group. She was no longer in chains like the others. There was at this period many late slaves did not come chained to each other and they didn't come naked. They came with clothing on and whatever. And they were brought in small groups and then sold. And she was a domestic slave for a family. And she was there as a nanny. And then she produced several daughters and a couple of sons. And one of her sons is my grandfather. So I'm just a third generation away from the slave time. So then and we preserve many, many things from Nigeria, from the natural religion or shamanism of West Nigeria, Yoruba roots. And my great-grandmother, Nya Mariana Mora, or Ogunike, her African name, she was a priestess, and she initiated all her kids, and one of them was my grandfather, and my grandfather then passed traditions, but he didn't want to initiate all his children. He said, I want them to in their own, and then I, being the first grandson from his last daughter, is the one who came fascinated with his whole African roots. The nieces from my grandfather were all important priestesses. And the other percussionist that I mentioned earlier, whose name was Patato Valdez, was a percussionist and a high priest of Shango, the fire god. And my aunt, the singer, the lesbian, was an Obatala priestess.
Oh, wow.
And then she moved to Mexico.
Yeah.
And left Cuba in 1958. It was the last time she celebrated one of my birthday, fifth or sixth birthday, with a piñata and all that. Never came back. She had enough, all this nonsense with the orchestras, that she had to fake that she was not lesbian and she was not allowed to bring her girlfriend to dress her and these things like that. And she said, no, you know what? I'm known enough, made a couple of records. I've had other territories where I'm already sung. I can contract somewhere else, not only in Cuba. And that's what she did.
Do you also work in your projects, like with religious aspects?
Yeah, and that's why in the whole panorama of travesty of men as women and the different cultures we had. And the Romans, the Greek theater, there were no women. There were men, there were masks. And then that's how opera come into it. And then it's Shakespeare, boys. And then I said, India with gods and goddesses. And I went into India and into Africa, the Yorubas. Natural elements of the nature were androgynous. So there's some god or goddesses of the water who have no fixed male or female underneath the ocean. You have other things like the air. Oh, he's not a fixed male or female. And that I incorporated into these traditions, that this idea of people fascinated with ambiguity
or
going across, you know, is not new. It goes back to all early civilizations. And that fascinated me in the carnivals, which in Cuba, the Africans could then reveal that in carnival as customs or rituals of dances. And that's how I used the carnival as the opening scene of my show, and then taking masks and then becoming a female, and then a female, the male is underneath it. and then go into a scene with about Africa, where I begin to use bush costumes who were not realized, and then having tits and a cock, which means totally a hermaphrodite. This is how I put things together. But because I had a background.
The room where we are sitting here at the moment, would you say it's like a stage or a church? Or
is normally it's a religious room, right? And people can here pray or dance or play drumming and go to meditation things and all that. And we worship the Yoruba Venus Oshun, which is the goddess of the river and the waterfalls. She is the Venus of the Yorubas, which is the identity and the energy that I am involved with. And I was initiated.
It's so interesting how this like religious part informs your love for stage and showbiz and transformation. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Oh. And also so telling that we are in this room here, which is like which I said, like it's like a mix of a
It has a life
and a stage and a church and a
And according to what it is prepared before with an incense or blah, blah, and then it's just used for that. And that when it's a party that is not to do, this goes outside and then the hallway, and then this, and it's just a room for that.
Are you then like the priest?
I'm a priest, yes. I've been over.
Priestess?
Priestess. Oh, sure, it's babelish, Baba, even I do. But I have this combination of the water and air. So I have the folk room, the clouds, which is the air we breathe, which is Obatala, that's why I'm white. And Oshun is the water that goes from underneath, from the Brunnen, and goes down the mountains, becomes a river, and ends at the sea.